Hello, and welcome to another episode of the Pedophile Huntress. We are here to discuss and normalize the hard discussions around the crimes of childhood sexual abuse. Society avoids what we face head-on during these hard discussions. Tonight with me, I have Carol Boyce. She is the author of First, I Believe You. I love that title. And Sylvia Trevino is with me again tonight. And we have a special guest that's going to join us tonight anonymously. She had been listening to our discussions and she reached out and said she wanted to join. She wrote me and she said, it's a shared type of understanding that I've rarely had in my life. And ladies, isn't that what it's really all about? So Amen. I welcome you all tonight. It's just been such a pleasure. And we just pray that you that are listening, you feel that you're not alone. Tonight, our discussion is going to be about how injustices in our lives when pedophiles are our family, how that plays out in our life. It's a very odd thing. So we're going to talk about, do we look for justice? Do we tell? Do we seek vengeance? And the other thing that we're really going to focus on tonight is, have we been angry? One of the things that I find is so interesting when I talk to survivor warriors, as I like to call them, because they're usually stronger than the average human being that I meet that hasn't been through severe trauma. So I just want to give a shout out to you warriors, is that we don't, our anger's kind of broken and the lack of justice that we want is broken, right? Like, I don't know. We're not really upset about our stories the same way everybody else is. So I want each one of us to kind of take the time to say, I'm going to start it with, in my life, it went before I turned four, I witnessed my father murder a woman in front of me. Now, it was easy for me in life to seek justice for her. Do you know who I didn't seek justice for? Was me.
Yourself.
And, you know, it was very, it's just this very interesting thing that we are so groomed at such an early age that by the time we hit life, we're not, we're not telling our stories, but we're also not seeking justice. So I don't know who wants to start, but I'm curious to really start with, why don't we tell? We've talked about that before. And so that's not really my focus. My focus is, how come our justice seeker is broken? We're not seeking justice. Someone talk about that with me.
Well, I'll start if you don't mind.
No, absolutely.
I think as you were bringing up, it's part of the grooming process. And I think it's our feelings and our emotions never mattered. I never felt
That's
like
so
that.
True.
There was any voice out there protecting and modeling being a warrior for me, right? I think that idea, we had to learn that. And I know for me, speaking up was not safe in our home. It was completely shut down. So why, as adults, you know, would we have some great warrior spirit?
I don't mean to laugh, but right, it's broken. I mean, laughter is acknowledgement that I completely understand that. You're so, it's so right.
And, I think as we get stronger and we work through things, then that's when we get that real warrior spirit, I think.
Amen. Yeah, I think that, you know, myself being in the Catholic Church, and you know, being it, I went to school at a private Catholic church, and we marched to church every morning. And you know, you had to walk, you know, single file. It was very strict. Once you got in, you know, you couldn't speak. And for me, that was where a lot of my silence and becoming this defenseless person came from, because I was so frightened. I never really looked up to the priests and the nuns. I was afraid of them.
Yeah.
So you're really saying, in my house and outside of my house and society at large, a voice around these subjects are not welcome.
No,
and so I guess because we don't have a voice is what I hear you guys saying. Why would we even think about justice? Because we can't even think about talking.
Right.
Emily, what
for
do you
me,
think about that?
Yeah, so for me, I think, you know, interestingly, outside of my home, because I got out of my family's home as soon as I could. I started working at 14. I went on a summer volunteer mission trip my entire summer between years of high school, as soon as I could. And I remember we were in a women's shelter in inner city New York City. And I remember hearing their stories and I shared mine. And so I started talking early, but I was within a Christian context where there was not a sensitivity to the gravity of the situation. So there was no reporting of what I said. And I was a minor at the time. And that's a very problematic, wow, I think. And there was huge. Also, yeah, there's huge. Also a, and so there you go. Like the introduction to the lack of justice, the lack of recognition mm-hmm. of the crime mm-hmm. and the pressure to forgive and to basically that yeah. false forgive and forget. And so that was my narrative for a long time, was that I needed to just let it all go and forgive. And if I didn't, that was on me. I actually had someone say, how you respond is where your sin begins. So, yeah. So
that's just so hard for me. Like the,
I know, wow. but that's the reality it of is the brainwashing
the reality.
Of the church, which is very agree. Unfortunate. So I didn't get that desire for, or I didn't see it as crime until I was a mother. I didn't see mm-hmm. it as crime until I was a mother. Yep, and yep, I was understand. Like, there is no way I'm putting my child in the context with these people. I finally could see them as dangerous. But I was 37, 38 by that time.
Mm-hmm. Right. See? And, yeah. and right. That, oh, Carol, what were you going to say about that?
Well, it's so interesting. We hear over and over and over mm-hmm. cases involved with the church. And, yep. I'm quite curious about how this all happens. And because the church does such wonderful things also, and it should be a place of healing. Mm-hmm. I was also told a lot about forgiveness and moving on immediately. Now, I'm mm-hmm. somebody who didn't remember it until I was 36, and I had a little girl coming up. Mm-hmm. So it's a little different that way also. But this whole concept of forgiveness is highly personal, and it's certainly not going to happen until a whole lot of healing has gone on, mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. if at all. And I think it's really because people don't want to hear about it. Mm-hmm. It's just right. like Jody saying, we're mm-hmm. talking about very difficult subjects. People do not want to know this. They don't want to hear about mm-hmm. it. And
and they want you to hurry up and heal.
That's yeah, because they don't.
We
don't
talked about that, right? Yeah. We talked right. about that, and there's a difference between the God of the Bible and the spirit of religion. Mm-hmm. And I do believe Amen. Incest sits behind the spirit of religion. And the spirit of religion, for anybody that's stuck in the spirit of religion, I'm going to say it again, that God gives you until you go home and you're back with mm-hmm. him to heal, mm-hmm. because we are in a humanity mess down here. And oh my God, triggers happen in 20 years. Like this Christian BS yeah. religion thing that says you have just a minute to heal. It can't be true, because things yeah. are hidden away in us and mm-hmm. locked in these recesses that we had to do to survive. And then when they come up, you think that a good, loving God's going to look at us and say, oh, sorry, your time's yeah. gone. Sorry, get time's on down gone. The road.
No,
you had 5 minutes to recover.
Exactly. Sylvia, go ahead.
And I think it's in general that society has no clue how incredibly damaging this is, that particularly mm-hmm. a parent molesting a relative, somebody in your immediate world family. Is incredibly mm-hmm. damaging. And I right. think that's really under appreciated. And yes. so that's why people think, oh yeah, we can just forgive and move on. And it's absolutely not at all.
So, no. We carry those trauma wounds with us for the rest of our lives. It's yeah. so fascinating. I'm about to start another life group at church, which is Journey to Heal by Crystal Sutherland. And it's a 7-step study to healing through Christ. But, you know, we talk so much about it in every step that, you know, we receive healing and we can find comfort in God. But those trauma wounds are forever. You know, once we have that wound, the scar is still there. And that's something that we can continue to work on. But, you know, the women that I work with, and it's just exactly what we're all saying. Mm-hmm. And there's just so much shame and so much darkness in the church.
It's exactly
the religion. You know,
it's so true.
Keeps us in shackles. And then the enemy comes in and, you know, we don't get any freedom. We don't get any healing.
No. Right. I just heard a man as I was scrolling yesterday, and he's a cool pastor that actually came through our church, and I can't think of his name and I apologize, but what, you know what he said? And I really needed to hear it. It's okay to cry when you've come mm-hmm. through long standing tragedy. God gets mm-hmm. it, and it's okay yes. to cry. And you know, I need to hear that again, because I've done yeah. some mm-hmm. substantial healing. I mean, around yeah. and you know, released myself from deep, deep caverns of fear and that kind of thing. But you know what? Sometimes it's okay to cry. Why do we always have to have this, you know, now we're good. I mean, I don't see that the Bible ever shows that, you know, even Paul said, I loved him so much. And he's like, I press on towards the goal. You know, we never attain. So why do we think we have to attain? But anyway.
Yeah. I've told my husband, I think I'll be healing from this until we pass. Like, new things are going to be coming up all the time.
But see, when I think that becomes our new normal, because if we don't, I remember asking my counselor of many years, and I said, Redmond, well, this, you know, can I get past this? And you know what he said? I'd love to tell you will, but you might be 80, Jody, and something could trigger you. And I can't mm-hmm, tell you that's not going to happen. Mm-hmm. Now, if we don't go forward with that real understanding, but the beautiful thing is, I've got tools to get through those. You guys, sometimes mm-hmm, yes. I'm so deeply mm-hmm. triggered around some really frightening things in my past. I'm stuck for a minute. And, you know, like I did this Unfiltered Stories, and the picture that they happened to use, that day was I was horribly raped mm-hmm. and my father's left his stuff and it ran down my leg. And I was such a little girl, I didn't have any way to clean that up. And mm-hmm. oh, you guys, I hadn't remembered that until they froze that picture in the video. And then that came Ooh. Back to me, that trip, that fishing trip that day. A loving God is going to mm-hmm. say, oh my God, Jody, let me hold you. And I let him hold mm-hmm. me because I needed to yeah. cry through that. So, mm-hmm. but you know, justice, you guys, going back to our topic, mm-hmm. and I love this, how we circle around, but what would justice even look like? You know, sometimes I really grapple with God, how do you can't restore virginity. You can't really, you mm-hmm. know, I can never know what a childhood feels like that doesn't have chaos, confusion, and pain. I mean, so mm-hmm. what does justice look like? I know restoration has to be part of it, but talk to me a little bit about what justice looks like to you.
Ooh.
The silence.
Right? Mm-hmm. See, yeah. isn't it hard, you guys, to put mm-hmm. a definition to it for us? It's
a big one.
It's huge. And some of these... Yeah, go ahead, Sylvia.
For some reason... You know, I'm really dealing with, even though, you know, I've been doing this healing journey for a long time. For some reason, we associate with them. Mm-hmm. And, yes. you know, we want to put, we have so much mercy for them, yes. which yes. is just so people don't to. Understand that, you know.
Mm-hmm. Right. They built that cohesion in us.
Yes. Mm-hmm. But I don't think, for me, I don't think I'm ever going to get the justice that I would physically want, but I believe that I can receive the justice and the vindication through Jesus Christ.
Mm-hmm. See, I get that, but let's act like we're 10 and someone came to us and said, this happened to you, because see, life has happened now. Right. And mm-hmm. so we already understand justice has not been served. I believe that God does mm-hmm. say, I mean, I was just reading in Nahum this morning where God says, oh, the guilty will receive punishment. I believe that mm-hmm. with everything in my heart. And so that does give me peace. And at the same time, though, you know, for people listening and for all of us, it's funny that we don't even have the language of justice. And that saddens me. Mm. It does yeah. sadden me, because yeah. there's so many little girls, and I'm a CASA worker here in Montana. And I go and I see these children and my heart just bleeds for them because I think, what is justice going to look like for them, right? Like they, the damage has occurred. They're going to have to walk their life. And so with that in place, give me some more words, you guys, about that.
You know, my father died and he never once admitted to what happened. He never, you know, it was always, oh, Carol's mentally ill. Carol is not stable. Although I had nothing to show that except from
I know, and I laugh because we're all, you're either nuts or sluts, right?
Yeah, right, right. but, you know, so he died without that. And my family believes him, not me. And so I can't look outside of me for justice. I think it's part of just forgiving myself for what I participated in and letting go of the shame. I think it's all those huge issues that survivors have. And I think that's kind of my justice, or believing God is going to, you know, he knows the truth.
I love that. He does know the truth. You know, that's
kind
beautiful.
Of your soul, because, you know, I don't have the courts. I don't, you know, they didn't do anything. So,
well, you know, for me, I mean, I can look back and say, I know what I wished would have happened and what would have been justice in that situation, but that's not realistic now. Of course,
right? Because you would have hoped somebody would have removed
or removed the young man from the home and done a deep dive on my parents and all that. But I think that, you know, now the statute of limitations has passed. I would have nothing in court, and I've just had to let go because otherwise, too much of my energy is spent thinking about all that. And then they still have a hold on me. It's still controlling my life.
Yeah.
And I don't want to live in that. So all I know is that God have mercy on their souls. Like it is, that's the bottom line. I'm not going to be able to do anything besides remove myself and my daughter from the situation. And I can only imagine if they actually take some time to be introspective and prayerful that there's a whole lot of suffering going on for them. Because
I think that's true.
I feel like my father was tormented. I feel like he knew.
I do too.
You can see it in their spirit. And but you know what? Justice and vengeance is God's.
It is. And that's why I didn't use the word vengeance, because oddly, probably I wouldn't have a super angry, vengeful person on the chat with us, but, you know, I know that you guys aren't, but I do think that justice does look like the things that I've heard you guys say, having a cup of tea in the morning with peace, having to go to bed without knowing that I'm going to have absolute terror wake me up in the middle of the night, or have the compression on the side of the bed, like someone sitting down for 20 years that happened to me, you know, on and on and on. So justice is freedom for sure. It absolutely is. And for everybody listening, for each one of us on this panel, I'm sorry that justice was not served the way it should have been. And one of the things that I hope that we can all do is bring awareness around this. Like I was thinking the other day, you guys, about, you know, the Holocaust and the Jews, and they've gotten their time to say this was wrong and the world has acknowledged it. And then Black slavery. And I really do feel like they've gotten a lot of acknowledgement. Childhood sexual crimes. Mm-hmm. There are millions and millions of survivors around the world. Yeah. Where's their justice? Where's people standing up? You know, people say, oh, I can't. Oh, it just hurts me to listen. It's just a crime. But why is it such a secretive crime? That's a whole nother topic. We're not going to get into it, but I think we understand.
Another
night. But I'll tell you, it is the darkness that surrounds it.
And I do want to also say that every one of the millions of people that have been sexually assaulted deserve to have a day in court and to have the perpetrator in jail. And it's really tragic that we don't have that. And honestly, the statute of limitations do not apply to sexual abuse. They should not be there, because people are dealing with it decades later. And
yes.
No, you know, and that's a beautiful thing to remember.
On that too.
And for anybody listening that has children that are going through that, prosecute. I mean, absolutely. I wrote a blog the other day about the Atlantic, and the Atlantic wrote this article and said that the very fabric of our society would break if everybody came out of the woodwork who has been touched by incest. And so if we could please all start standing up, it would actually help the generation of children behind us. Because, you know, we've got to change this. These are crimes.
I would also say people need to get really safe before, you know, jumping into that. Because I think back to my life.
That's a beautiful thing to say,
My life, I relied heavily on my parents. I was very isolated. I was a homeschooled child. So I needed them. I had no way to pursue anything against them. Because of how they ran our household and because of how they designed our life. So I just think if you want to get involved in, you know, prosecuting or in any way questioning a situation, the children need to be safe. There needs to be preparation for what
could happen. Well, there does. And and I'm going to say, though, I stayed in a lot of abuse because I didn't know how to get to safety. And so there, you know, I have a sense of urgency in my soul because my children were also sexually abused by the man I picked because, of course, I mean, I came from that. Then I pick a man who's just like my father. And to me, there is a sense of urgency. And I 100% agree with what you're saying. And both can be true. Please have a sense of urgency and get to safety because
And, you know,
the problem is
from...
the longer you stay, the more that denial kind of creeps in and year after year goes by and everybody's still being damaged.
Sure. And you know what, I guess what I mean by seeking safety is seeking social support, seeking a separate
and it's hard
location,
to find.
All of that.
Right. It's hard to find.
Emily, you have a very interesting situation because you're one of the few people I know that did speak up, did tell the parents, did make it very clear what was going on. And
can we stop right there? That is so good. But can we bring the listener into the story right there? Because I think that's awesome, Carol, to actually talk about that.
Okay.
Oh, did you want me to mention it?
Like, yes, please. I think it's good just because they don't. Right.
Oh,
they don't have the history there.
Sure. So I grew up in a very religious home. And my mother homeschooled me and I had a younger sister. And when I was 6 years old, my parents took in a young man who needed a home. He was older than I was. And he began to sexually abuse me from the time I was 7 till I was 9. And then when I was 9 years old, I tried to report to my mother. But it was all a muddled mess how the whole thing came out. The young man denied it. My mother told my dad what I had said. My dad said, someone's lying here. And if no one fesses up, then I'm going to be punished because there has to be justice. There's that word, Jody. There has to be justice for this situation. And I was so appalled by my dad. And what he said was, I would be like Jesus and I'll take the punishment. It was so, it was spiritual abuse, essentially.
Oh, religion.
And psychological manipulation. And I remember just being in tears and saying, I didn't say it right, or I was the one, because I just couldn't, I was overcome. And so then I was punished severely, very severely for it. And then basically it went underground. My dad didn't say anything to my mom. My mom didn't say anything more about it. The young man stayed in our home until I was like 15, I want to say. So that's the context. And I did try to speak out, but after I was beaten with a piece of wood from my dad's shop, I said, it was awful. And that's the context. And I wasn't going to say any more. So Carol, to your point, I did try. But
and the church shut you down.
Well, my parents representing the church.
It's terrible, Emily. I'm so sorry, because you were trying
so sorry
to do everything right.
Yeah, and it, you know, it speaks to the illness of my parents as well, right?
Well, like right. And you know, the absolutely. Evilness, I think there that one man who wrote the book A Road Less Traveled also wrote a book called Evil People. He since changed the title, but it was first called Evil People. And one of the things that he said that most counselors in psychology forget are some people are just dark, and there is just there isn't a cure for dark but light, right? So Sylvia, you said an interesting thing that I think is really good. You talked about how commingled we are with the abuser, and particularly when it's our family. And it's like what Emily said, you know, I needed them. I relied on them. They're the source of our, I've always said this, my father was the source of my nightmares, but the source of my comfort. When those nightmares came because that woman was being murdered, I'd run to his room, or, you know, whatever nightmare it was that I had, he was also my comforter. So the great conflict, right, that wages within us is profound. And so you're right, we're so confused by the time we hit life. What is justice? It's kind of why I brought it up. We don't have a sense of it, but I that's why I wanted to bring kind of light to that mystery, that we should have a sense of wanting justice. We should ask God for justice. It's actually all over the Bible, so we really should bring that back alive. But it's been so beaten out of us, literally, emotionally, figuratively, and physically. Most of us could say, I don't know for all of us, but I certainly got many beatings from my father if I was just out of line. So mostly I was just a good, compliant girl, so I wouldn't be more hurt, because I was already going to be hurt. But to try to mitigate damages, right, you just complied. So one of the things I want us to talk about now is, because I think this is interesting, it's hard for us to articulate justice. I also think it's hard for us to articulate anger. And so, Sylvia, why don't you start with what does anger look like in life? I can say for me, anger has looked like overdrinking, going out with the wrong guys, always hurting myself because I never know how to get it out. So I'm going to just stop there, but I'm going to pass it to you. Tell me what anger has looked like for you.
It, you know, really, when I got older, like, you know, you all have said, it's 36, 37, 38, when we start to, you know, have the memories and the flashbacks. And, you know, I had so much anger for my father. I had so much anger for my mother, who it was definitely, she was not at fault in any way. But I had anger for so many people, for the church, for the, for my, you know, the nuns and the priests that were my teachers. Like, why didn't you protect me? Why, how could this happen to a 5-year-old, you know, when I'm surrounded by people who should protect me? And my anger was all on them. And of course, you know, my father, but that did manifest in very unhealthy relationships. Because when we get into a relationship and then we tell somebody our story, they don't know how to handle it. Because
we're,
it's
open
a,
game.
Yeah, it's a hush hush. You know, oh, I'm so sorry that happened to you, and then just keep it moving. And it's like, you don't feel heard.
Right.
So then you're angry. So then you're angry at that person. And then I would always just self-sabotage. And, you know, at that point, I'm like, I'm done. Goodbye. Next.
Yeah.
You know.
Yeah.
And the drinking and, you know, the just the self-medication to make yourself feel better.
Can I ask you this? All those people that you just said you were angry at, did you go to any of them and talk to them?
I did not.
Yeah, I did. I did. I was one of those people that I did. And you know what?
I'm glad I did.
Yeah, I'm glad I have. I mean, to go confront my father, you guys, sometimes literally I would have to stop because physically I was so terrified to be around him. He kept a gun by his side. You know, I watched him kill somebody. I'd stop and have to drink like 3 Cadillac margaritas just to get my body to stop convulsing so that I could walk in. Not convulsing, that's the wrong word, but shaking, trembling is the right word. Just absolute trembling. Yeah. Oh, I was, it was terrifying just to walk in his house. And it only lasted about 20 minutes.
Of course, it must have been just horrible.
Right.
Horrible. Yeah.
So, Emily, and can you talk a little bit about your anger?
The anger? Yeah. Oh, yeah. I was feisty as a child. And I think I've been angry at my parents since I can remember. Yeah. My mother was not a safe person. She will even brag about stories about how she's so proud of herself for putting me down in my crib instead of shaking me, because all she wanted to do was shake me, and she was worried that she would harm me. And she brags about how she protected me that way.
Oh, they're so righteous.
Yeah. So I think, you know, I just was fighting from the time I can remember. And I'm glad, like, for whatever reason, God put fire in me. That's how I see
it. I get some of that.
So the main way that I coped, even as a child, was through physical activity. Like, all I remember is I ran and ran and ran. And my mother would send me out the door and just send me to go wander all day long. Even as a homeschooler from 12 noon on, she didn't really want to deal with me. So the way I got through was just moving, 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 moving. So I ran and I roller skated. And if I was angry for being spanked and grounded one more time, I remember punching my pillow. So I was very physical. Mm. And then I also channeled that anger once I went into compliance mode, Jody, like you said, which happened at age 12. I remember I was like in seventh grade, and I figured out that the best way, I just was like, forget this, I'm getting myself out of here. And I just went inside with my anger. Mm-hmm. I started to have eating problems. One thing I did with it was I was basically going to show them, and I worked as hard as I possibly could in school. And so some of it was constructive, mm-hmm. I think, like some of it mm-hmm. motivated me to do some really good things. But others of it was destructive because it was too much exercise. Like, my knees are relatively shot for my age.
Why my hips? Yeah.
But I'm like, you know,
yeah.
I think I coped. You know, that was
angst.
That was a
yes. Yeah.
And then
angst.
I teetered on the edge of a full blown eating disorder. But I think it was an angel that saved me, that taught me about real good nutrition.
Oh, that's cool.
So.
Oh, I believe in angels. Say,
yeah. So the anger piece, I didn't really get exceedingly angry at in a way I could articulate until I was in this latest round of therapy, which was when I was around 40. Mm-hmm. So I'm 43 now.
Wow. No, it's good. It's good to talk about it. Carol?
Yeah, I was just going to say, Emily, that's just amazing as a child that you came up with, like, mm-hmm. hitting your pillow mm-hmm. and running, because those are great ways mm-hmm. as adults too to handle the anger. And I too turned it totally inward with an eating disorder. And I want to keep bringing that up, that mm-hmm. eating disorders are very... a very serious, deadly consequence of child sexual abuse. So
I know almost all of us. I mean, mm-hmm. you know what I mean? So many survivors, yes. You guys, yes, all yeah. of us yep. could probably say we have it. I didn't call it that. My kids are like, Mom, you totally raised us with an eating disorder. And they,
yeah, struggle. Right. And yeah. they're not really recognized that way. Mm-hmm. And it's really important for people to understand,
yes,
that.
It is.
But I had, I was kind of a terrified person. I don't think that I was extremely angry at my mother. She was a raging kind of alcoholic and angry. And, you know, just she took over the whole house with her anger. And I was very angry about that. My dad, I adored. He was passive, you know, and I had no idea what had gone on. All mm-hmm. I knew is I was terrified, and I was kidded for that I was so frightened by the world, kind of. But then when I got memories and realized what had happened, I was really enraged for mm-hmm. years.
You know, that, right. That is so good, Carol, because it's true. I think fear actually blocks anger.
Yeah.
Because, mm-hmm. you know, it's like these emotions mm-hmm. that compete. And in my life, fear was definitely stronger. So I just stayed quiet and compliant and had all these messed up deals that I.
Yeah. I mean, had I just secretly. Had to be compliant. I didn't dare, you know, speak up at all. Mm-hmm. But then, you know, as an adult, that anger, and I talked about this in my book too, is that I started, I would drive around, and I'm talking really slowly and in very quiet neighborhood, our neighborhood, and I could just rage and just really let my mom have it, my father have it, my, you know, the world. I was so angry that I didn't have a childhood, that I didn't get that safety, that peace. It still can make me angry. You know, so
especially too, Carol, probably when you see other people, because our abusers were our father.
Yes.
Right. And, you know, when we see families and we see just this, you know, amazing dad, and it's just like, wow, what must that feel like? And then the anger that follows. Right. I'm sure you can relate to that.
Right. You know, these Christian women that, you know, and I love some of them absolutely amazingly, and they talk about God, and I think, well, God, that's easy for them.
Yeah.
They haven't lived through all this stuff. And those are just real feelings that are safe to have, because like, how can I can't, right? I mean, it's so hard not to have those feelings. And I'll just be really honest with God, like, Father, I'm struggling with that. Like, she's beautiful and she has this great life, and I know it's not perfect. Like, I'm too old to think that anything's perfect, but you know, those kinds of things are hard. And I think one of the things that's helped me with anger, you guys, is I've gotten older and learned how the tools of healing are. When I have now and I'm triggered and I walk through a memory, I allow it quickly, because I used to always, when something came up in my mind, I used to put it down. Sometimes I'd put it down for years. And I remember this one counselor saying, Jody, you make it so hard on yourself, because just bring it up. Because like the room the lady was murdered in, all of my life I knew that room existed. I knew we had gone to a motel room. And I knew, which actually is the very last thing that I want us to talk about tonight. And we might go a little bit over. But we started that, how do we know when there's something hidden? I'm going to start. This is funny how this is exactly how I wanted us to end. And this is exactly where we moved into. Because unfortunately, I think the reason that we don't know what justice is, we don't have anger, is because, by God, you guys, we're blocked. We have all of these hidden things in our souls. And so there is no agenda around our story, because we don't have our story. And so like that with the murder, particularly, although with my mother's abuse, I really blocked that deeply. It was the last abuse that came out. But I always knew all of my childhood I had. These are the signs. What I want to talk about right now, you guys, are the signs of what it looks like when we have blocked memories. So when I was a child, I had a reoccurring nightmare of my father in my bedroom, but now that bedroom had become a office. There was a woman in front of him. He raised up her skirt and began to rape her after he shoved her down, and it would come, it would stop. I had that, you guys, I mean, literally a reoccurring nightmare all of my childhood. I never knew what it meant. And I always knew that there was this motel room we had gone to. Now my father let his buddy, I wasn't trafficked. My dad was too cheap for that. He just gave us away to his friends. But I thought that maybe that had just happened. So that's how I knew. That's one sign. Yeah. There's, I could tell you many others, because I had leg cramps, debilitating leg cramps all of my childhood. I'd wake up and take hot baths. Talk to me, you guys, about why we know there's something hidden in us. Because often people will say to me, I think I was abused. And you know what I want to say? If you think you were abused, you were abused. Because people don't say, I think I was abused if you weren't. So you guys talk, let's bring to bringing again, taking away that the shroud, that mystery around all of these childhood things. Let's talk about that. I don't care who starts.
Well, you guys. I will jump on in. I also had two recurring things. I knew every single night I went to bed, I had the same vision that I had. There were two men outside my window. I had this huge patio window, and I knew they were just waiting for me to go to sleep so they could get in and hurt me. And it was just part of life. I knew I was going to be hurt if I went to sleep. And no idea where that came from. I never told anybody, but I always had it. And so I guess that nightmare piece is pretty common with children being abused. It's coming out at night. And also I was kind of the kid that was too perfect because I was terrified to do anything wrong. And I think I was a very, very overly compliant. I think when you see a child that never does anything wrong, you have to question that also.
I agree. Right, because we're in full submission to our environment, to society. Yeah. We're in full submission.
Out of fear. Out of fear.
And I think, fearful children, like, why do you have these fears? It's not normal to be terrified of your world when you're a little kid.
Well, and to add what Carol was saying, at 36, she realized that her father, who was a physician, would come into her room in the evenings and rape her and then leave. So it was always in the night. So you go to sleep as a child.
Middle of the night.
The middle of the night, he comes in. You're not really sure if it's real or not, which we all deal with. Did this really happen or didn't it? Should I believe myself? Should I not? And so instead, you get this reoccurring theme that comes to you about this. So again, I mean, that's a perfect way to describe it. Sylvia, do you have one that you can describe?
Yeah, I also had a lot of flashbacks and a lot of dreams, a lot of nightmares. Mm-hmm. And, I immediately knew, but it had been years, and it did come in little pieces.
Fragmented.
But like you said, if you say, and I have people say, I have a dear friend recently that just told me, I think I was probably, and I'm like, okay, I'm gonna help you unpack all that, because like you said, it's if you think and you feel it happened, you don't know who, that's something we don't just randomly put in our head, and I once I knew it, but it was a flashback. It was a dream. That's how it came to me, because I think we want to protect, we put our protectors on. So if in the real world, if we really admit it and we see, then we have to deal with it in the pain. Yes. So then we stuff it
100%.
And
then
it manifests and it comes out in our dreams.
And we talked a little bit about that last time. Yeah. To avoid, more significant pain. That's so true. Emily, you started with, when we were talking before we began recording, you talked about knowing that you have other things that are hidden. Can you talk to us about why you made that statement?
Yeah. So as my daughter is growing up, so she had just turned 7, and I know there's going to be more coming. But I've experienced dissociation, so meaning where I completely disengage, like my body will still be doing the motions of whatever needs to be happening in the time, but I just start being in a totally different world, spacing out above the situation, maybe some flashing back, like basically I go into my headspace or my, and so when those times of dissociation occur, I have, when I come back to myself, I go to my journal as fast as I can and just say, this was what was happening. And I dissociated. And I used to be ashamed of dissociation because I felt I wasn't being present. Mm-hmm. And I was somehow not smart enough to stay present. And I'm hypervigilant. So if I dissociate, I feel unsafe. But then I think I actually dissociated as a child to protect myself. But I'm I want to be aware of everything all the time that I don't want to dissociate, if that makes sense. So anyway,
I think we all understand completely.
So as I've grown, I've come and learned through therapy and through reading to embrace those moments of dissociation, to say, okay, there's something there. Take it to the therapist. She can walk me through it. Okay, like what was happening at the moment you dissociated? What came into your mind? Tell me what you remember from it. Just like name it all, talk it through. And then that's often when there's like a big
breakthrough,
almost like seismic shifts.
Yeah.
And things open and you see more and you understand more and pieces come together. But I know a lot is blocked because I don't remember so much of my childhood. I remember being outside because that's where I was safe. I remember being at other neighbors' houses, ironically, because that's where I was safe. But I have very few memories inside of my parents' house, especially after age 9, when that very unfortunate situation where I tried to report occurred. So
right.
I know there's more there that may be coming through. And I also, you know, I still have symptoms of like seeing my parents and myself as I age in my own body, like the appearance.
Oh, isn't that hard,
body.
You guys? Yes.
That is hard.
That's
and
hard.
So I know that like mm-hmm. when I see a certain angle of my hand or mm-hmm. my eye or I catch myself in the mirror,
mm-hmm.
I know it relates to things, some of which I've explored, some of which may come as time goes by. But I think that for me, that dissociation piece is like a clue.
I think that is so, can't we all agree with that dissociation? When she brought that up, that is, yeah. Yes. I can remember this specifically this one time. I was raised in the Northwest and we would go to the beach all the time, including, you know, when I was a child, when I grew up, my kids, and then as an adult, with, can't even remember which husband. No, I can, because I've been married a few times, because when you come through these things, for me, relationships have been incredibly difficult. And I'm sure mm-hmm. We're going to actually have a panel about what that looks like, because they're really, it's terrifying actually to be in a relationship. But I had a dissociation. To me, all of a sudden, everything looks foggy, and literally mm-hmm. it looks foggy. And I realized as I went through healing, I got keenly aware that my environment was foggy. Literally, it looked like fog was around me. And I remembered what Redmond would teach me is, if you're in a dissociative state, and it's like what you said, to move through that dissociative state. And that time that happened so severely at the coast, you know, just another memory of my parents with mm-hmm. their friends and some terrible abuse that happened there, but they were all out on the fire. It's weird how all of a sudden your mind, but it's not like we talk about that shiny red trike. It's ugly. So mm-hmm. I don't know mm-hmm. what the cloud is, but it's like, I don't want to go there. There's like trepidation that all of a sudden comes mm-hmm. up in my soul. Sylvia, do
well,
you
I think,
yep.
I think it's really important to realize too, like as children, we had so few ways to survive it.
So
you know, we were just in survival mode. And they've done a lot of wonderful studies on the chemicals in the brain. And by the way, studies show our brains are different when we've had severe trauma.
Absolutely.
They can see it in the brain now by MRIs, and there's been wonderful research on that. But there's chemical things that are always going on that kept us safe, and it was the only way we survived. Mm-hmm. So I think in a lot of respects, we have to be very thankful that mm-hmm. we came up with these methods and that they're still there. And another thing I want to say is I have flashes of it, that kind of thing. And finally, I had a therapist say to me, Carol, you probably don't want to know everything. Do you know enough?
I've prayed that before.
Right? Maybe you right. have enough to face this, but I know I'll never have all of it.
Right.
Most of it's gone, but yeah. I know enough to know what happened.
Exactly.
You know, so I think that's a reality too.
I think it's a balance of like seeking that psychological healing and doing the work, and then trusting God to lead you in the next
yes,
step.
I love that. Yep. I love that, Emily. That yes, I really, really resonate with that. Sylvia, did you have something to say about that?
No, I think just you know, we how in the world were we supposed to navigate?
Yeah.
You know, so and the only thing we could do was, you know, disassociate and you know, push those memories away. And you know, not only, but I feel like it's a blessing that I got everything in little pieces
mm-hmm.
that mm-hmm. for me anyway. And I pray that that's, you know, how it is for other people, because even just one memory, even just one flashback just wrecks our entire world.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
You know? Well, it does, but you know, it also, I have to tell you guys, and this moves me a little bit. I feel more like myself than I ever have since I was born, because I was taken hostage from the second I entered my parents' house. And to have the strength and the tenacity and the faith to know that a great big God warred with me to get my life back from them has been the biggest justice that I've, and to have the courage to stand and say, you know, I know that you murdered this lady. Those are tough things to say, you guys, because you want to, you want to deny those things. Like for me to step into, for any of us to step into any of this tragedy, to be raped when you're three, these things are, we are called liars. They hide behind, they're looking good. You know, you guys, they are so deceitful. This is why I always say it's a crime of hell, because they're so good that you actually think if they're standing by a righteous person, they kind of look the same. They're very hard to flesh out, even for
it's
an
wolves.
Adult.
They're wolves.
They are wolves. And so think about
and
for
that's
children.
What sociopaths do. And I think it's really hard to accept that your own father, parent is that person, but they look good. That's exactly
they
what they
look
do.
Good.
And they can really hurt. They can hurt their own child and then just get up and go on with their life. That's not normal behavior. You know, that's somebody that's very, very ill.
It is. And then yet we are the ones, like you said, oh, she's mentally ill. Oh, Jody, you know, like when I went to the police, my entire family said she's had mental health issues forever. I've been a director in a law firm for 20 years. I'm smart as I'm a badass. Like, really? I'm not. I don't have a mental illness.
I know. Like, wait a minute. Really? Yeah.
Right. I mean, we are accomplished women in our own right. And it's like, really, I remember reading this book that said people who come through real tragedy are our CEOs. And that because stress doesn't affect us the same way. I remember Redmond used to say, because people around me in a law firm, it is a very, you know, it's stressful. I mean, let's just say you're missing a page, you got to get it filed, or you're going to be in trouble with, you know, all kinds of stuff. Anyway, he would say to me, no one's being raped or murdered, Jody, so you're fine. Because I would say, why do all these people freak out? It's just a filing. And that's what he would say. Well, for you know what I mean? Can you guys relate to that? It's
completely.
Yeah, like our we're on red alert all the time. And I remember he used to say to me, if I could just get you to Amber and let you live at Amber, I've done my job. And I think I live at Amber, you guys, because, you know, people will say I'm so intense. Well, dear God, I'm doing super good. You should have met me.
Really. 20 years ago.
Me a long time ago.
It's true. I'm mellower now. But I thought of one other thing, Jody, that was a clue to me.
Yes. No, I love it.
In high school and college, I wanted nothing to do with having a boyfriend. I didn't trust anyone. I trusted no one. I especially didn't trust any male.
I've struggled with that still.
I didn't. And so that to me is a pretty big red flag. I would have a crush here and there. But there was no way I was going to enter into romance or intimacy with. Yeah,
that's
trust.
That's a whole discussion of its own.
But,
which I really.
But you had asked about like signs of it, and I think
that's
another sign.
No,
for
I love
me.
That.
I do too.
100%.
Well, you don't go through a normal adolescence. No. I mean, I feel like I never went through adolescence.
No.
Breaking from your parents or anything. No, you're just like in terror and
exactly.
trying to get through. And like Emily, you just shut down normal adolescence, right? Where you're. You know, you're dating or whatever.
I just skipped to let's go to college. Let's get out of here.
Right.
Well, because we're so confused, you guys, like I always say, you know, these people are so good. If you're looking at wood, when they get done with you, you're going to think you're looking at orange metal because they confuse your faculties so well that you don't trust yourself anymore. And one of the deepest tragedies, I think, is the cover up afterwards. Not that the rapes and all of the crimes that have occurred are not bad, but then the whole world supports, it's an abuser centric society, and we've got to stop that or we're never going to stop pedophiles. And I have never seen a pedophile that when you tell the story, it doesn't change who they are. And that's why I say we are breaking down pedophiles one secret at a time, because it changes them. And I have watched it happen. If we stay in the story with them, it keeps them strong. So anybody that's listening, if you are standing by a pedophile or going to Christmas dinner, please stop. In the name of God, please stop. Because all you're doing, if you love them, actually walk away. Because if you really love them and care about their soul, don't stand by them. Until they come to some kind of repentance and understand that it's different. even at that time, you'd have to have really strong boundaries around these people who
they're not move safe.
They're not safe. Pedophilia, not safe. That mm-hmm. you are yeah. so given over to darkness by the time you move into that. They're mm-hmm. not safe. And I don't care what they're telling you. They are not safe. You need to have Amen. A cavern of safety between yep. you and that abuser. So
yes.
we are at time, and this has been so wonderful, but Carol and I have been working on some topics to bring back to you. And we're going to continue these panel discussions. I think I'm going to keep it with our base and then add guests to come, because it's just, yeah. for me, it's comforting and it's good. And I just love this time. And so I wanted to stop with, we started with these people are evil. In my book, I wrote a book called A Prisoner by No Crime of My Own. One of the things that we talked about today was how it's hard for us to see who our family is. I'm going to read to you guys a couple paragraphs of what my daughter wrote about who she saw my parents to be. And this is what she said. My oldest daughter describes her grandparents here, the devil with a baby face. As he grew older and darker, his skin seemed to drape over bone, a white skull's face, eyes so dark they seemed a cavern through which the light was pouring, a pinprick of red in the center, perceptible to even the smallest in the family, a physical embodiment of eternal war. He was always watching, always listening, his cold Tertullian breath forever on my neck. Grandma had a face filled with a desperate yearning of malevolence, and she made a home where harm was the norm, where evil settled in the corners like dust. In her, there was a blankness that held unspeakable darkness if one were to scratch at the surface. She was a bloodthirsty follower with remorseless manipulation honed under years of supervision from the devil himself. They hurled themselves upon weaker, more innocent people, a will and lust for power, for lust itself, an evil that would rather kill the person doing the questioning than take a realistic look at it itself. Evil colonize them. I just want to say, when we close tonight, if you're listening, get out of the colony. Get out of the colony, because you know what? Our kids can see it. If you stay in that colony, there are going to be generational traumas and generational crimes that continue. So we are here with you. If you like what we're doing, please subscribe and follow us. We'll be back with you next week with another episode. Ladies, God bless you this week. Have his covering over you. Let his angels protect you. And I'm going to see you guys next week. Love you all.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Love you too.
All right.
Thank you.
Ciao.
Bye-bye.
Bye-bye.